Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is December 19th, 2013. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's the holidays. Our holiday card is up on the blog. If you haven't seen it yet, you definitely want to see Santa's reindeer pulling Santa in his spacecraft. Our donations for the year are up there, and we've also highlighted them on the blog. Also, give the gift of Solari. What we're offering is for every subscriber who would like to give 2 months of complimentary subscription to the Solari Report to the person of your choice. That is there as well. And if you want to take avail yourself of it, please, if you haven't yet, contact customer service. Our theme tonight is get ready, get ready, get ready. And that's because if you think the speed of change has been dazzling in 2013, it's going to accelerate in 2014. And with it, there's a lot of very positive news. One of the stories of the week, kudos to Chuck Gibson, who keyed me into this. Algae to oil in less than an hour. We've seen lots of efforts to turn algae to oil that planes, trucks, cars could use. I've posted several articles on efforts underway at MIT to do that, but announced from the one of the federal labs is a process to do it in record time, and that's what it takes to really make it economic. And so they're saying they can turn it, essentially, they're describing it as pond scum, to oil in less than an hour. And of course, that's oil that planes, trains, and other modes of transportation cars can use up. So for all of those who thought you had pond scum on your ponds, no, that may just be oil that can fuel your car. So very exciting story. Another story that fits in with it, as we have an explosion in innovation and new technology, we're also seeing efforts underway by the regulators to allow lots more money to flow more easily into the equity markets. The SEC announced a higher limit on small stock deals under the Jobs Act, boosting it by a multiple of 10 times. That's Reg A. It overrides the state process. That's a big one, and it indicates, along with a strong IPO market, that there's more and more money flowing into early venture and private equity that's looking to go public or raise capital. So as we see the explosion of innovation on the one side of the balance sheet, expect a higher degree of liquidity investment on the other side of the balance sheet. And we've seen a shrinking in the North American markets of the number of companies in the stock market. This is all set to dramatically increase the number of companies in the stock market. So watch out for it. It's going to be very interesting. Part of that is related to another story up on the blog. Reuters has a big piece on Pentagon waste. So I had to say something. I said, in a world of modified limited hangouts, the Pentagon waste story is the equivalent of the Caddyshack gopher. You can't kill it, although it makes no sense, and it just won't go away. It's the ultimate cover story. Well, sure enough, I suspect it's not unrelated to plans underway to re-engineer the defense base. A lot of the infrastructure in North America, industrial infrastructure, has been run on a cost-plus basis because that's the way government contracting is run. Now, with the fiscal cliff upon us, there's tremendous pressure to re-engineer that federal base, and I think this is part of it. And so it dovetails with the new innovation, the changes in the SEC rules related to raising capital, and the sort of decentralization and shifting that base to being much more phenomenally productive and generating more profits for companies. That's part of it. So don't believe the waste story. We had to put up again a link to one of our pages on missing monies. Okay, money and markets. The big story in the markets this week, of course, was the Fed announcing that they are going to taper starting in January. Their balance sheet has now exploded to $4 trillion of assets, which is pretty mind-boggling. Although, as you know, I think many of those assets are essentially worthless. I think they've been having a shredding party cleaning up the fraud. But what they did do is announce that they're cutting their $85 billion a month of purchases of both Treasury and mortgage securities back by $10 billion a month. I put up a little commentary in the blog, which said Fed delivers bah humbug to gold. Stock market was up slightly, you know, sort of record high territory. But gold down, and then this morning broke through the 1200 line. I put another link up to my article on what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals, where I strongly recommend if we breach the 1200 line that you only be holding core position at that point, that you sell out of any investment positions, because I think breaching the 1200 line, it can go much lower, particularly if it breaches 1180 is the line that Franklin and I talked about in the last precious metals market report. So gold looks very, very weak here. So if you haven't, if you continue to maintain investment positions in gold, you definitely want to read that article. We're coming into the time of year when at the end of the year and the end of the fourth quarter, we look at how the different asset categories have really been for the year. And there's a great, you know, that's a time when asset allocations really get looked at. And what's important to understand is that essentially almost everything was down this year other than North American markets. We have emerging markets down about 8 to 9%, commodities down much, much more, with gold approaching 30% down. But you have some commodities down more than 50 or 60%. It's an extraordinary time for the commodities markets. North America is now up over 20%, but the bond funds, long-term treasury funds, down 10 to 14%. So with emerging markets down, bond funds down, commodities down, gold and precious metals down, North America is up sharply, but everything else is down. And so the question, if you're a money manager, is do you keep your money in things that are high and with the hope that they go higher, or do you start to look at the other thing, other asset categories, which is difficult because they're still flat or going down. So the question remains, can North America continue to go up? Very big question. Bonds have been coming down for about, you know, the long-term bull market in bonds has been going on since 1980. So we see interest rates falling until this year. And then starting this year, they started to spike up. And so making a lot of these fixed income positions more unnerving. I also just wanted to show you a chart of North American markets versus the emerging markets, because when the QEs, when the quantitative easing and sort of central bank pumping started after the bailouts, the emerging markets in North America were trading up together, but they've diverged tremendously this year. Part of that is a commodity story, with the emerging markets much more tied to commodities. But when you look at the North American markets, we're at a PE of 24 or higher, which is very high on average. But if you look back since the beginning of the S&P index in the 1880s, what you see is there have been two spikes that took us much, much higher. One was the what's called the Roaring Twenties, and then, of course, the tech bubble. And if you look at the new technology coming out and what the sort of rule changes that the SEC is making and the strength of the IPO market, the question is, could it happen again? But whatever way we look around the markets, the bad news about the legacy systems is everywhere. That's very much a bond story. And the good news about what's going on is, or about the good news about what's going on that's positive is percolating, but it's amazing how much of it still remains hidden. But you can see it when you look at the S&P 500. Currency wars continue to get more and more intense. We have the same battle between the old and the new, and between centralization versus decentralization. The Bank of England, and this is up on the blog, announced they're going to plastic currency by 2016, so more digital currency essentially. The largest Bitcoin exchange in China, BTC China, announced that they are no longer going to accept yuan deposits. And that's on the heels of the central bank, China Central Bank, saying that the country's banks and payment system were barred from handling the virtual currency. Doesn't surprise me. If I was China, I wouldn't want a digital currency that leaves a digital trail coming in and soaking up my good currency. So on that announcement, Bitcoin fell by over 50%, or approximately 50%, which is why I keep saying never put any money in Bitcoin except that which you're prepared to lose 100%. While that was going on in the digital currency side, South Korea announced they're starting a physical gold exchange. And as I pointed out in my commentary in the blog, this follows on the heel of Singapore, Moscow, Thailand, a series of different countries doing the same thing. And it's not surprising that as we see more and more push towards digital currencies and plastic currencies, that the big financial centers, or the certainly the financial centers in the areas which are growing, the sort of BRIC nations, not in the G7, that those players want the ability to settle in something real and without necessarily leaving a digital trail, which is why I say in my article on precious metals that I pointed you to, you want to continue to hold your core position. The growing economies of the world are certainly building theirs. We continue to see more and more reports of gold being moved to China. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it in Ask Catherine. And I would just underscore the fact that we really don't see the full picture on what's going on. The data beast is on the march. I call it the data beast after an article I wrote called The Data Beast, which I really encourage you to read. But there are numerous articles up on the blog about the NSA battle and the battle over surveillance. Let me tell you what the end game here is, because you're going to start to see more and more as these different, whether it's the litigation or congressional policy or different private companies positioning themselves in certain ways vis-a-vis the NSA. What the end game is here is we're watching an effort by the shadow government to really cut out the government. They're going to depend on the telecoms, on the search engines, social media to run the sort of surveillance infrastructure. And what we're seeing is a cutting of the power of the government now that government funding has basically paid for the building out of the network. A lot of those companies built a lot of what they did as government contractors. So basically, taxpayer money has built out the network, but now the private guys can take it over. And the NSA is subject to FOIA, is subject to congressional oversight. If you want to understand the dynamic, we had on the Saleri Report about a year or two ago the movie, Italian movie called The Listening, which shows the shift in the balance of power between the contractors behind the NSA, and the NSA is one of the sort of subplots in the movie. And what it reminds you is the compromise of privacy will be much worse under the private guys. I put up, somebody sent me an article that was a impassioned defense of the NSA by a former employee, and I posted it. And it tells one side of the story. The budget deal continues to be headed for approval, but the Secretary of the Treasury reminds us again this week that the debt limit extension is still not resolved. The deadline is February 1st is when they say they're running out of money. And so if we're going to have a sort of a get off to a stable start, we need more than a two-year budget deal. We need the debt limit issues resolved. The other thing is Congress did not renew unemployment, which is a little bit surprising because the long-term unemployment extensions, because that's going to be an immediate whack to the GNP in the first part, in the first quarter of the year. And it's certainly a bah humbug to happen at Christmas. It'll be interesting to see how this plays in 2014, because the employment situation continues to be bleak for many, many people. We continue to put the fiscal cliff pieces, cycle them up on the blog. And if you don't want to read it in one sitting, I would encourage you to check it out each week. Just happened today, Obama issues veto threat over Iran. So the Iran deal continues to be dicey and very politically sensitive. We see Saudi Arabia kicking up their heels and screaming all week long, and I doubt that that's unrelated to the politics between the president and the Senate over the Iran bill. China is celebrating its first lunar probe. It successfully landed its probe on the moon and now announcing it's planning on sending another craft in 2017 that will land and return with samples. So the race for space is on, and we'll talk more in the wrap-up this year about the incredible growth and explosion of investment in space. It's very real. Good news for 2013, the Trans-Pacific Partnership ended the negotiations for the year with no deal. They could not get to closure. Hallelujah. Anyway, so we'll have to come up with stratagems to make sure that doesn't happen in 2014. Under the category, no. Iceland put some bankers in jail and has come up with a new constitution. And this is widely being circulated around the internet as to the implication being, oh, maybe we should consider a new constitution and start crowdfunding our constitution. Don't go there. Don't think that's a good idea. If you think things are bad now. Wait, do you see what happens if Mr. Global can talk people into putting the constitution in play? Don't even open that one. There are also a variety of various articles about how wonderful it would be if we could give up property rights, how wonderful if everything could be not-for-profit, we all need to share, we all need to stop trying to own our own homes, and all sorts of other various attempts to market feudalism and, you know, sort of personal financial powerlessness is fashionable. Don't buy it. You know, that's under the rubric of what's coming with the NSA scandal, which says government's bad. Let's give the telecoms control. Anyway, so these are, you know, fascism being fronted as reform. Don't buy into it. Interestingly enough, my last comment in Money and Markets for this week is there was a Wall Street Journal poll, page 2 of the Wall Street Journal this week on Wednesday, entitled Politics Divide the Sexes. And interestingly enough, there were 8 different topics from the economy to gun control, and I agreed with the men 7 out of 8 times, which I thought was interesting. If you look at the wide disagreements, and they are wide disagreements between the genders, it struck me that many of the positions taken by the women in the polls were very much sort of positions that were relate to the spin that tugs at the heartstrings, as opposed to looking at the deeper story and watching what's really going on. So I would just say to all the ladies out there, make sure when you think about your assessment of different policies, you look at what's really going on, what the deeper story is, and beware of the heartstrings being pulled. It's one of Mr. Global's favorite things to do, is pull the heartstrings and get the women to sort of pull the rug out from under the men. So remember to be very discerning. Don't buy it for a second. Okay, our hero this week is Dave Andrew. One of our donations is a wonderful organization in East Troy, Wisconsin, Michael Fields Agricultural Institute, interestingly enough, in Paul Ryan's congressional district, no connection to why it was chosen. It is an institute to teach biodynamic farming. The Michael in Michael Fields comes from Archangel Michael. It was started by 2 wonderful people, a couple, Chris and Martina Mann, who wanted to make sure that the knowledge of how biodynamic farming was preserved and passed on. Dave was a farmer for many years in Iowa. He has a family farm and then worked at the Iowa State University Extension and ended up going abroad to manage farming operations in the Philippines and Romania, Africa, and the Middle East. Very well traveled. And he was recruited by Chris and Martina to run Michael Fields. And one of the things he's done since he came there is to do a series of things and try and get funding for programs to reach out to veterans interested in learning how to farm. And I can't think of a more worthy and appropriate cause to support. So thank you, Dave, for everything you do. We love farmers, but we really love farmers who teach other people how to farm. It's what we need. Ask Catherine. This one I read before. I wanted to just touch on it again. Hello, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber. I followed your work on Unpacking Mr. Global for a few years with great delight and enthusiasm. Nothing interests me more, excites me more than putting on the They Live glasses and looking behind the curtain. I have many questions, but I'll ask only one for now. Concerning Al Gore's recent anti-oil campaign, do you think it's possible Mr. Global is using useful idiot Gore to get big university endowments to sell their blocks of shares in a bit of a panic to power elite insiders? This question is premised on the assumption that Mr. Global has big plans for exporting refined product, petrochemicals, LNG, and shoring up the empire from its base in the U.S., along with agriculture, as you point out, this article from Foreign Affairs on Americans' energy opportunity. Was this the article you were thinking of in the Jim Norman interview? Basically says, harm the Middle East, decrease consumption of refined product in U.S. by using alternatives at the margin, and then export refined product in LNG. Basically, Al Gore says, sell big oil, and Warren Buffett buys Exxon. I think Warren is savvy and Gore is a stooge. What do you think? Thanks for your time, Catherine. I know you're busy. Interestingly enough, Buffett just announced a major wind energy deal, going to be a combination of renewable and, or he just announced a major wind deal. I think what the Council on Foreign Relations has said, and or what they've published as articles in Foreign Affairs saying, what we want to see is a combination of fossil fuel and renewable fuels. We want to essentially have a very robust, very diverse and resilient energy base, which I think is the case. I do think this idea of Gore running around and doving tail with a university endowment selling oil and gas is a very interesting development, and I'm glad you asked about it. I'm not sure what it's about. I do think there's a lot of innovation coming. My guess is what it's about is if you're going to engineer a new sort of tech bubble, you want to get people excited about the possibilities of new energy. At the same time, you may be hoping that that's going to help you export a lot more, and but you're certainly not going to give up the base. The fossil fuel base, I think, is going to be around for quite some time. So I think it does make an opening for the, you know, a new innovation bubble, and I think it makes it easier to export. So I think your points are very well taken. Dear Soleri, I've heard Catherine speak about similar activities that's been going on with our within our government. Here's an article and video discussion of people and companies who have been submitting their own technology to the government, and the government begins plagiarizing and using the technology for themselves. That's an old and very common story, so it doesn't surprise me. We put the post up to this story at Fox News. A lot of times it's not just the government, but you may have individual bureaucrats or politicians who see the opportunity to turn that, sort of give that technology and give it away in exchange for a variety of different formal and informal kickbacks. So, one should always assume with dealing with the government that you're not necessarily dealing with honorable parties. It was very interesting. I saw a very good interview of Elon Musk saying they never file patents because it just makes it easier for other people to steal it. I thought that was a very sage comment on his part. Next question. Could you please comment on the following information from John Hathaway of the Tocqueville Gold Fund? I put a link up on the blog of the article, of this article's, or we'll put a link up in subscribers to the piece by John. Essentially, what he's talking about is the sort of the march to financial and political repression, and what's going on is an effort to control more and more where money can go and how it's going to be managed. One of the things the person asking the question says, does this mean an outgoing bank wire is going to be stopped in the U.S. and 30% taken out if I send money to gold money? That's referring to penalties of sending money to a company that is not compliant with FATCA. I think it's very unlikely that gold money would be out of compliance, but we have seen wires stopped. There's sort of an ongoing economic warfare to keep money from flowing freely out of the country. There's never any problem when the money flows back in. I do think that what we're watching is a steady growth of repression. I do find Hathaway's article to be a little bit naive. I'm not worried. You know, the ultimate control is the control not of your money, but of your physical body. It's one thing to hold up bank accounts, but it's another thing to spray chemtrails over your head for the last 10 years. So I still have this sense of disassociation when I hear the financial guys rant about these things, because frankly, if you look at what's been happening with the food, with the vaccines, with chemtrails, The bigger problem is not that somebody's going to control my bank account. It's that they're going to poison me and I'll be dead long before my bank account is. So I think, you know, we're dealing with a very serious story of repression. If you look at the facts of what's been happening in the food supply, in environmental pollution, you know, a hypothesis of what is going on is an alien invasion at this point is more logical than the problems of currency and debasement. That's what I was writing about when I wrote my blog post, Breaking Through the Cloud Cover. If you haven't read it, you might want to go back. So yes, I agree with Hathaway, but I think the story is far deeper and it's a much greater problem. If you haven't seen the interview I did with Alex Jones in 2010 called The Looting of America, I think it lays it out pretty well. One of the things Hathaway talks about is the extraordinary amount of gold going to China. And yes, we're seeing reports, very significant reports of gold going to China. Hathaway, I should mention, is a very credible money manager. He runs the Tocqueville Gold Fund. I have the greatest respect for Hathaway. At the same time, I don't trust the information about gold going to China because the question is it really going to China or is that an air cover? Is it going someplace else? So I think the published information on the different inventories of gold leaves a lot to be desired. And I think there's a deeper story going on here and we don't yet know what it is, but I'm always interested to read what Hathaway has to say. Dear Catherine, Lindsay Williams made some comments about a global currency reset possibly on the horizon for 2014. I would like your thoughts on the likelihood of this occurring and who would benefit the most. Since almost all currencies are fiat these days, I find it hard to fathom what the replacement would be. Yet the thought of holding worthless dollars makes me want to put most of my assets in gold and silver. Currency resets have been happening all along. In essence, the debasement, you know, the kind of reset that Lindsay Williams is talking about is a fast reset. What the slow burn and the debasement has been is a slower reset. So the question is, are we going to do it fast or slow? I don't see the scenario that Williams described for 2014 as likely. I do think, as he talks about, the goal of Obamacare was control, and that with control of the healthcare system in place, it makes it easier to proceed with more rounds of financial repression. That's why it's so important in 2013 that the federal push for gun control failed, because I think a well-armed population is one of the few things standing in the way of the kind of financial repression that is possible. The big question on the currencies, of course, is not, I don't think it's the way Williams poses it. I think it's how fast can they get to an all-digital currency? Because if you can move to an all-digital currency, things can get pretty controlled. So with that in mind, I wouldn't say that you want to put all your assets in gold and silver. I don't think you want to put all your assets in anything. I'm a great believer in, having things spread around, but you certainly want significant assets and tangibles. You want assets invested in your health, your skills. You want much greater personal resilience. And I, for one, continue to believe that a good position, a core position in gold and silver is very appropriate. And that's why I think I wanted to highlight that story on the exchanges. You're watching the countries with very strong growth around the world going to a place where they can have very significant positions in gold and silver. So they want a core position. I think we do too. But I wouldn't put all your eggs in any basket, including gold and silver for sure. And don't expect gold and silver to trade well in the near future and maybe the intermediate future. Let's go to the movies because the winter blues are always a possibility during this time of year. I reposted our link to the 20 funniest movies that I put up a while ago. And of course, one of my favorites is the lead this week, and that's Rosalind Russell in Auntie Mame, which if you want to laugh over Christmas time, Auntie Mame will have you laughing. There's some wonderful movies there. My favorite part about that post was that lots of readers and subscribers jumped on and posted their favorite movies. So if you want a great selection of movies that will make you laugh and make you cry and make you glad to be alive, there's just a treasure trove And I really recommend that to you. Our interview tonight, this week, is with Dr. Laura Thompson, nutritionist from California, wife of John Rappaport, remarkable, natural, gifted healer. And it was a wonderful interview. It's posted up on the blog. One of the things I wanted to underscore, because I got several wonderful comments from various subscribers, is we had done a show on radiation poisoning. And one of the things Laura reported in the interview is that she's seeing more and more signs of one of the things she pointed out is she has a series of patients who are surfers. And there, she said the surfers who are surfing in the Pacific are getting sicker. And she described the symptoms. And we, of course, reminded you that we did do a discussion on radiation poisoning, and that's in the archive. Anyway, it was a wonderful interview, some great ideas about how to make sure that your immune system is as strong as possible during the winter months, things you can do. And for me, Laura is always inspiring. She always inspires me to say, wait a minute, let me stop rushing around and take some time to really take care of me. And it was really inspiring. So I hope you get a chance to listen over the holidays and be inspired to take better care of you, because one of the things I point out with Obamacare, it's really much more cost effective to invest the money in making sure you're as healthy as can be. Remember, a healthy immune system can save you a great deal of money. Okay, well, that's it for December 19, 2013. This is my last Soleri report of 2013. I'm going to go to work immediately. I already have on the annual wrap-up. This is very important time for me. We're going to be talking about the highlights of 2013, the top stories of the year, as well as what we've done in the Soleri report that we thought delivered great value to you for the year. We're going to talk about top trends to look forward to in 2014. Some of the things we at the Soleri Report are going to be focusing on, and we're going to announce our poster for 2014, which is just fantastic. Wait till you see it. I loved our one for 2013, Coming Clean, but we've got one you're going to love for 2014, and it's of course our theme for the wrap-up and for the year, so we can't wait for you to see it. We'll publish it right before the Friday before the wrap-up, so right at the end of December. And then on January 9th, Franklin will join us for the Precious Metals Market Report. A lot to talk about. We'll see how we close out the year. So I hope you all have just a wonderful holiday season. I'm holding all of you in my prayers for good health, good prosperity, and great new adventures in 2014. If you have any ideas, things you want me to cover on the wrap up, any ideas to get in there, I would really encourage you to post your comments or send them in by email. I want to make sure that one is a great one to help us sort of position our lives, our households, our budgets, and our investment strategy for 2014. So until January 2nd, 2014, I'll see you next year. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck. Thank you. Okay, well, I'm about to welcome to the Solari Report a woman who needs no introduction, Dr. Laura Thompson, who's the founder of the Southern California Institute of Nutrition. She's my nutritionist, of course, and she became my nutritionist because I heard so many stories of people being healed who had given up and thought things were hopeless, and some of my favorite ones come from her husband, John Rappaport, who also needs no introduction on the Solari Report. So with winter upon us and severe weather happening, I thought it would be a great time for us to do a roundup on winter wellness and draw on some wonderful programs that she has in the archives of the Solari Report, which we can draw on today as well. But I think this is a perfect time to have this conversation. And so welcoming in from the San Diego area, Dr. Laura Thompson. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I love talking with you, Catherine, and I love also talking with the Solari audience. They're a cut above.
So we know one thing that you've taught us all, and that is that one of the grand solutions to all health issues is to have a strong immune system. So maybe if we could start off today with you describing what the immune system is.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, it's kind of a nebulous term, isn't it? Basically,
yeah.
It's I call it your army, you know, your internal army. But the reason that it's kind of hard to understand is because it's really a combination of things. It's a complex network of tissues and organs, which means, you know, cells, and then the cells clump together to make tissues, and the tissues clump together to make organs. So organs, cells, chemical messengers, and basically their focus is to protect us from daily bombardment of things, which could be anything from what we think of as germs, bacteria, viruses, parasites, fungus, yeast, mold, allergens, you know, I mean, anything that could create an inflammatory response. And so those organs basically are the thymus gland, which is at the top of the chest, and that's that's basically the king of the immune system. And then you have the spleen, and you have the lymph system, which is a system of vessels, very, very tiny vessels, much smaller than the circulatory system. And the lymph system carries lymph fluid, and lymph fluid is where a lot of your immune cells flow. Then you have the T cells and the B cells. The T cells are made by the thymus gland, and they basically fight infection and cancer and that type of thing. And then the B cells are made in the bone marrow, and they make antibodies. So they kind of deal with the memory of what has come into the body, allergens or viruses. And then we have something called the Peyer's patches, which I'll get into a little bit later, which are in the gut. So you can see the immune system is really strewn throughout the body. And then that doesn't even include the chemical messengers that go from the gut to the brain and other organs. So it's a pretty vast network when you think about it.
Right. So so what happens, how does winter challenge our immune system?
Well, kind of depends on where you live, I guess, but, you know, what the weather is like. But certainly the weather, I mean, actually anywhere, because it's all relative to where you are. You know, because, I mean, I'm in California, and when winter comes here, people act like they're in the East Coast. <You know>? I mean, Californians are kind of wimpy anyway, but... But so, you know, we're dealing with a shift in the weather. We're dealing with less sun, you know. Typically it's more cold. And then you're dealing with this, you know, other stressors, and certainly you have holiday time. And, you know, I think all of these things play into. Plus, I think with winter, you know, people kind of go inside, even personally. You know, they just kind of go within. And so emotions shift, and, you know, so it's just really one of those things we have to roll with, you know, mm-hmm. we have to get our body able to adapt and roll with it, which it's totally capable of doing. You just have to, I guess you don't have to, but it's helpful if you know how to.
Right, and it's also the time of year when our bodies need for an occasional hibernation or cleansing mm-hmm. come to the fore, in my mind.
Yeah, it's true. It's a time to shed, and yeah, I think it's, you know, from an emotional standpoint as well as physical.
Right.
So I look at the big, I call them the big three, and those are the three basic organ systems that we need strong in order to winterize our bodies. And that's the immune system, and I include the lymph system in there, as I mentioned earlier. And then there's the digestive tract, which I'm going to refer to as the gut. So if I keep saying gut, pardon me, but I'm just so used to saying it that way that that's just force of habit. That is where the largest part of the immune system lies, in the gut.
Right, I know, you know, for years I've wanted to, well, last January I stopped eating bread mm-hmm. and tried to live a completely gluten-free life. And I just feel like my gut is so much stronger, and my immune system as a result is so much stronger. Now, you know, it just, because I got tired of listening to you and all those folks talking about what it was doing to my gut.
It finally worked.
It finally worked. I finally got sufficiently scared to death to realize, I have to do something.
Yeah, it's so great that you did that. I know it's not easy. And, I fall prey to... to the occasional piece of Italian bread when I'm out, but hardly ever, you know. And but this is the thing. Somebody said to me just the other day, one of my patients said to me, what is the big deal? You know, why is this whole thing about gluten being blown out of proportion, and all my friends are blah, 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 and it's like everybody's just going with the pack, and, you know, I don't really care about this, and I said, I think that you probably would have been right years ago if this was happening, but the gluten molecule has been so hybridized and so changed
right.
that our bodies don't recognize it. And the point that I want to make, and this is actually pertinent to this discussion, because, we have a continual mucous membrane in the body. We think of mucous membranes as maybe being in the nose or the throat, the ears, which, of course, and the eyes, of course, that's true, and the mouth. But we have this continual mucous membrane, which is basically like an organ that is just all through the body. And it lines the lungs, it lines the digestive tract or the gut. It's around the joints. I mean, it's in the vaginal area. I mean, it is basically an organ. So the thing about gluten is it pierces the mucous membranes of the body. So it creates offense, which really physically is in the form of tears or inflammation, almost like, like if you were to look at it, you might see tears or like red blotches or something like that, which you can't see because all the mucous membranes are hidden. But
right.
That's what gluten does. And so when people have sinusitis or when they have asthma or if they have Crohn's disease or, other intestinal problems or even arthritis, and you take the gluten away, a lot of times you can reduce, incredibly reduce the inflammation, and
right.
some of these problems will disappear.
Right. I'll never forget reading and listening to Jeffrey Smith talk about what sort of the studies on what GMO, when you create these seeds which are Roundup proof, so they can, they literally have poison in them, and it goes into your stomach and your gut, and it stays there. So you literally have, sort of pesticide-generating stuff in your gut. And I remember reading it and thinking, no wonder if people feel so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I said, that's it. I'm not eating any of that stuff anymore.
That was super smart, super smart.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a point because I didn't finish my big three list.
Oh, sorry.
I went off and on a rampage.
Right.
So just to reiterate, the big three winterizing organs are the immune and lymph system. That's number one. Number two is the gut, where the largest part of the immune system is. And in there is the Peyer's patches, which are this group of lymphocytes, lymph cells, that do a lot of defending and weeding things out. So they deal with toxins and they deal with infections. And because when you think of it, even if you have like a sinus problem or a lung problem and you're swallowing all that stuff, it's actually becoming a gut infection. So it's like a secondary infection. So the Peyer's patches handle all that. So anyway, it's the immune system, the gut, and then number three is the adrenals, which comes back to the, what we were talking about, weather and darkness and light. Because the adrenal glands are your adapters. They're your let's roll with it organs. They're stress-modifying organs. When the adrenals are strong, a person is going to adapt to the seasons more readily.
Right.
Okay.
So let's talk about what happens when, you know, what happens during winter that is a sign of a compromised immune system? What are the things that happen? What are the things that are bound to hit us during winter?
Okay. So the obvious is a cold and flu.
Right.
It's, you know, that's, I guess the standard would be like two colds. I shouldn't laugh because it really isn't. It shouldn't be a standard, but
right.
There are two colds per year, and or the Christmas time where the child brings it home from school, and then all the whole family, and then everybody's down for Christmas. And oh my God, yeah, I had a great Christmas, except we all had the flu. I hear this every year. I hate to admit it from my patients too, but. Yeah, well, we'll talk later about how you can prevent all that. So, and then there's also, you know, just not even just for winter, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to list all the things, the pictures that would indicate a compromised immune system. Colds and flu, allergies, sinus problems, sinus infections, sinusitis, asthma, gastrointestinal problems. They're rampant in, especially at holiday time because of how people eat. You know,
right.
So that basically what happens is when you're eating sugar and drinking alcohol, and then you have the gravies and all the heavy foods taxing the digestive tract, it actually can lead to gut infections because there's a lot of fermentation and stagnancy that happens. And, you know, it's like stagnant water. Well, what happens? It breeds mosquitoes and whatever. And so that happens inside the body, too. So infections occur in the gut largely because of diet. I can't tell you how many people I know that get shingles or herpes, especially in the winter, because they're more stressed. But we have really, really good ways of handling those. Yeast infections, bladder infections, I think the alcohol and sugar consumption. I'm not against alcohol or sugar. I like both of them, but I hardly do them.
Right.
Because I've had my days of all that. And, you know, it's just not good, especially when you combine that with all the other food and the stress that people go through. Just sort of stressor upon stressor. Skin problems are pretty common in the winter time. Whether it be eczema or psoriasis, fungal issues. But the skin is also an immune organ. You know, it's your actual first line of defense. You know, it's the first thing that things from the outside hit. So, and that's, you know, those are certain ways, you know, skin irritations and infections that immune problems manifest on the skin. And then you have autoimmune problems, which we won't talk about much today. I don't think they're necessarily indicative of winter problems, but they certainly are an indication. I really want to make the point because so many people are getting diagnosed with autoimmune problems nowadays, whether that be Hashimoto's, thyroiditis, hypothyroid, lupus, MS, fibromyalgia. You know, there's so many, the different neuralgias. There's so many different autoimmune problems now. I want to make the point that the medical system, the reason they tell you they don't know what to do about it or all they can give you is prednisone is because they're not looking at what's causing the problem. What's causing the problem, because they don't know, you know. They say, we don't really know. You're just going to have to live with this. What's causing the problem is the immune system.
Right.
That when you say autoimmune, it's the immune system attacking a certain part of the body in different parts for each condition. So why? Does it just decide, wake up one morning and it says, okay, I think I'm going to attack the thyroid today, you know?
Right.
And then it keeps doing that for 7 years. No, the reason is because the immune system is being stimulated, being hyperstimulated by either infections, allergens, or toxins. And then, of course, emotions come into play and other things, too. But it's basically those three categories, infections, allergens, and toxins. And that's what one needs to look at when we're looking at what do we want to remove so the immune system can be strong.
Right. So it's all about getting back to a healthy immune system. If my immune system is healthy, Laura, what does it look and feel like? What does that world look and feel like? Because to get there, we need a picture, you know, of what it looks like and to know it's possible.
I would say, I sure know it's possible because I see it every day in my practice or every season, where you go through the year without a cold or a flu, or you go through 2 years, or you go through 7 years without getting sick. And one of my ex-staff members, said to me 1 year, and I think it was around Christmas time, we've been bombarded with a lot of people, you know, who are sick. And she came in and she said, you know, I've been working with you for 9 years now, and I think I've only had one cold the whole time. And she said, and I don't think you've ever taken a day, you know, been off one day, one sick day. And that's, you know, that's what one way you can look at a healthy immune system is a person doesn't get sick. Now, there are other people that say they don't get sick, but then, you know, like I had a patient a couple of weeks ago who said, you know, I never get sick, I don't get colds or flus. You know, we're coming to the end of the conversation, and I'm saying, is there anything else that you want to tell me? And she goes, oh, yeah, I just want you to know that I had cancer 2 years ago. And
right.
I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, that, you know, she thinks she's healthy. So, but basically, high vitality, no sickness, I would say years without getting sick, really healthy digestive tract, no gas, bloating, no infections, 2 bowel movements a day, stability, no allergies, happy. I mean, to me, that's the sign of you know, being good to others, not
right.
having to constantly defend yourself or be irritable or, you know, because those are all signs of the emotional immune system being off.
Right, right, right.
Does that sound like a good picture?
Yes, it does, and it sounds like a feasible picture, but it, you know, in my experience, it takes a real investment of time and money. And I think this is particularly timely because one of the things I kind of feel with the new Affordable Health Care Act that the whole country is now entering into a process I started into in 2000, which is saying, look, I can, you know, I can't access the traditional system or I can't depend on it or it's not there. And I have to get really radical about being healthy. And I need to completely reorganize how I approach things because I can't, you know, I've got to try and do much, much more for myself. So I've got to front end load my investment in health. I can't look to the back end for help. And which, of course, gets us to our eating habits. So maybe if we could talk about what are the eating habits that weaken the immune function? How do we change that?
Yeah, okay. So I had a patient yesterday who she actually came to me because she had these bugs in her scalp. They call it springtail. And so I, you know, had to educate her about how when you have an infection in your scalp, that means that you have an infection inside the body. And so my point is that after about 8 months of treating her, she did a retest on this biofeedback assessment that we do, and she was appalled when she got a retest because she didn't understand what a lot of the numbers and the words meant. But I said, hey, look, this is a really good retest. You've done some great work here. And she goes, you mean I'm not done yet? She got rid of the bugs, and she had to shave her hair twice, you know, in the past year. And anyway, she got rid of all that. She's feeling better. She's, you know, and she said, you mean I'm not done? Do I have to continue this? I said, well, look, this is a choice. You can continue. You should. I think you should. You're in a much better place. You feel better. But this doesn't stop. You know, this is like,
right, this is,
you're taking
this
care
is
of
forever.
Is the most
right.
important thing. So we talked about food because she said, now, can I start loosening up? Because she'd been gluten-free, and can I start loosening up? And I said, well, you can do whatever you want to do, but the best way to eat is really to eliminate all the chemicals and anything that's processed or on a shelf that can sit on a shelf that's dead. Because you can't create life with dead food.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to have an occasional glass of wine, you know, for a celebration, that's not a big deal. But people who drink two glasses of wine per night, probably not good. It's I know it seems to be almost a standard with at least my patients when I ask
really?
Them about how much alcohol they drink. Well, just a glass or two wine per night. I don't think that's good. You know, I guess organic
right.
would be best, of course, but, you know, that's a lot of processing for the liver, and then alcohol turns into sugar. So I said that's like eating two desserts a day.
Right.
The other issue is fats. There's, you know, we've so highly processed our fats in our society, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are not doing fast foods or anything like that. But oils are super important. And, you know, the oils, the flax oil, the hemp oil, olive oil, evening primrose oil, you know, there's the coconut oil. These are all really good things to incorporate every day. And I would say at least two servings a day. But you just have to know that they're best unheated. The best one to heat would probably be the coconut oil because it has a higher flash point. But anyway, so utilizing really good oils helps to eradicate what the bad oils do to the system, because bad fats can suppress immune function. They can clog up the liver and the gallbladder, and basically, that actually affects the brain too. You know, I used to say to people, you want your brain is made of 60% fat. Do you want a brain made of French fries or sunflower seeds? But so keeping the brain healthy is so important. I had this 76-year-old woman sitting in front of me yesterday, and she's so sharp. She comes back to me every year for like what she calls her checkup, because she doesn't go to normal doctors. And
right.
I was looking at her thinking she's like a 25-year-old or more so even. And she's, you know, just has been taking care of herself. When you see older people, I know everybody talks about Uncle Charlie who smoked a cigar and every day and always drank and still lived to be 93. And sure, some people can do that. I think you're going to see less of it. You can
right.
tell, you know, nowadays, and you can tell that by looking at the kids and how.
Well, one of the things is the environmental toxins and pollution are just mind-boggling compared to what they were even 20 years ago. And so, if you look at what you have to do to stay healthy in today's environment, it's a very different thing.
I know it is,
you
and
know.
You use the right word, mind-boggling. Because sometimes, when I start looking at it all, I get so overwhelmed. It's like, how
right.
are we going to protect from all this? We just have to be as pure as we can physically, and we have to keep good thoughts and keep a good head on our shoulders, because that will help us create. Basically, what we have to do is we have to be a good filter.
Right.
You know, we have to keep unclogging our big filter.
Right. Well, that's why, to me, that's why the immune system, you know, there are two things going. You know, build your immune system, keep detoxing, because without a strong immune system, given what's being, you know, the bombardment, you're not going to make it. So it's just unbelievably important, and that's why, you know, I should mention we did a show last January on detoxing, and that's, to me, one of the things you can do to help your immune system is just keep detoxing, because the toxins are just going to keep coming in. You're not going to, you know, there's no way to protect yourself from it. It comes in the oxygen, it comes in the water, it comes everywhere.
It's true. And it seems to be getting worse and worse. So we just,
right.
Yeah, like you said, you just have to keep, it's like in the exercise world, you have to, there's the anabolic and the catabolic. You have to build and then you tear down. The tear down would be the detox, which is a good tearing down, you know, and then you rebuild. You know, so I'm a firm believer in seasonal detoxes. Even if it's just like a 2 or 3 day juice cleanse or something. But I do believe that at least twice a year, not just January. You know, everybody thinks of January, which is good. It's good. It's a great thing to do. But I think it needs to happen at least twice a year, if not 4 times.
Right.
And there are, different detoxes for different people. Some people, especially if they're working super schedules, may not be able to do a full-on, you know, 5, 6, 10 day cleanse. But, you know, you can always pull something off, you know. And if you've never done it before, you just got to dig in and start, because it's not really that difficult. Once you get past the 2 days of attachment to food, because I think that's the emotional attachment to food is really one of the biggest stumbling blocks, don't you think?
My church in Washington used to, we would have a church-wide fast in January, and it was fantastic because you really helped each other get going and support each other, and, you know, different groups did it in different ways. It depended on your approach, but it was very supportive, and we just said, okay, now we got to clean our minds, we got to clean our bodies, we got to, you know, and it was a great thing to have.
Yeah, wow, it definitely does help. This past October, I did a 10-day cleanse, and I usually do my cleanses alone, as my husband really doesn't like to do those kind of things. but one of my staff did it with me, and it had been
a while. Yeah, it's very helpful.
Yeah, it's such a great thing, because it's a difficult thing to do. Well, anyway, I just wanted to mention what I think are the 5 eating habits that weaken the immune system, which we've talked about mostly already. Chemical and processed food, alcohol, bad fats, sugar, and in that I want to mention the high fructose corn syrup, because that plays a role, you know, beyond just the fact that sugar destroys or interferes with the ability of the white blood cells, which is your immune system, to destroy bacteria. Aside from that, I mean, high fructose corn syrup does that. Plus, it's so toxic to the liver, and it really wreaks havoc with pancreas and blood sugar. And of course, it's just really poor quality. And then the 5th category, which we sort of touched on, is food allergens, which, you know, a lot of people think they don't have any, and maybe they don't, but I think also a good word to use would be sensitivity, which wouldn't be a bona fide allergy necessarily, but a sensitivity might be causing a problem that you wouldn't recognize because it's not manifesting in a way that you would think it was a food. And that could be even like aching fingers, you know, or gas or bloating. You know, there are different digestive, you know, a lot of people who have everyone who has IBS has food sensitivities.
Right.
And so the common food sensitivities or food allergies would be gluten, dairy, eggs, corn, peanuts, sugar, soy is a big one, chocolate, and then sometimes citrus fruits and berries, depending upon the person can be, you know, can be pretty inflammatory. I had a patient yesterday who came in after doing the MetaFast program, which is, you know, medically prescribed, basically bars. And she did it for like 4 months, and she lost 28 pounds, and she was really happy, but she felt terrible. And she was losing her hair. Her hairdresser actually sent her to me because she
wow.
noticed that her hair was really, really thinning. And her nails were all bumpy and everything. And anyway, I'm bringing this up because of the soy. She said the thing that made her stop the program is that she had so much gas she has had to walk out of the room, you know, because she was farting constantly. And come to find out, she then decided to look at the ingredient list and saw that there was a lot of soy in these bars and all chemicals and everything. Anyway, the point is that that sometimes we have, you know, normal reactions like gas, but we don't realize that, you know, it's probably more than it should be. And we should look at what we're eating, because you can usually trace it back to something.
Right. Right.
And on that note, as far as the food sensitivities and allergies, a leaky gut, which a lot of people I'm sure have heard of by now, which basically just means there's tears in the intestinal tract that have come from infections or irritations from allergens, and that allows certain molecules of protein to slip into the bloodstream. This leaky gut can be healed. I mean, I see it all the time. We do this biofeedback testing, and we see leaky gut with over 50% of the people I work with. But when you have a leaky gut, what that means is that certain things are in the bloodstream that shouldn't be there. They're pre-digest food that's not been fully digested. And other things, too. Yeast and parasites and things can actually get into the system, which would be called a systemic infection. And that's what that's one of the things that causes the immune system to flare up. So one of the ways to protect the immune system and strengthen it is to heal these tears in the gut, stop wrong foods from getting into the bloodstream, and therefore reduce the immune response, allow the immune system to do what it's supposed to do, which is proper surveillance and, you know, creating little skirmishes to, you know, to kill bacteria.
To protect you.
Yeah, and allow it to do its job and not, you know, give it all these false alarms.
I just have to bring up one more because this is, you know, at any given time I'm always working on breaking one bad habit, and that is dehydration. So I've been trying to drink, you know, 8 to 10 good glasses of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally made it. You know, I'm really into good water habits. And what I find is if I'm dehydrated, I can't think of anything that weakens my immune system faster than, you know, going through a period where I forget to drink water and I get really dehydrated and then everything just stops working. So I would also make, yeah.
That's a great point. Because basically when you get dehydrated, what that means is that your cells are not working.
Right.
Because, the, you know, they're sparked by the electrical current in the body, which is sparked by the minerals, the sodium, potassium, chloride, and that's, you know, the one of the things that the water is giving you. It's basically like a great multi-mineral. It is, so many people are dehydrated and don't realize it. And, you know, it's not only about how much water you're drinking. Of course, it's great that you're making that change because that's, you know, it's so important.
Right.
It's so such a basic need for balanced health. But it's also how the water is being absorbed.
Right.
And one of the things that I find in my practice, because we do certain types of testing, is that people could be drinking, you know, the right amount of water, which is basically half your body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 140 pounds, then 70 ounces would be your target. So, but even if they're drinking that much, if it's not actually getting absorbed at the cellular level, then the cells can be dehydrated though you're drinking water.
Right, right.
So there are certain homeopathics that one can use to open the cells and allow the cells to spin properly and uptake the water. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Right. It makes a big difference. And I know what I find is the quality of the water has a big impact for me on whether it gets absorbed or not. So if you come to my house, I have my own well, and I have a whole house filter and all sorts of other stuff. So
what do you do when you go on the road?
I pray a lot. But what I do is I have these sort of tanks that I fill up on my well water, and I put it in the car. And my strategies for how I access food and water on the road very much relates to getting high quality water. And so I'll go to extraordinary lengths and carry, huge supplies of water with me.
So, I mean, I know I've seen you, and your car is full of ice chests.
Something.
I mean, you have, everything filled. I don't even know how you see out of the rear window. But I didn't realize that you were carrying water also.
Oh, I can. Sometimes I can be carrying as much as, 50-plus gallons of water.
Oh, Catherine.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually spectacular, but that's a lot of work.
Yes, it is. But I find, here's the interesting thing. Let's say I do a 3-day drive up to Montana or out to California. Mm-hmm. If I pack all my food and water and I eat from the car, I arrive happy, healthy, full of vitality. If I just eat and drink from the road, when I get there, I feel like, it's like I'm a dead person. I feel like the walking dead. You do not, we used to play a game where we would stop and try and find real food. I mean, you literally have to live on oranges and bananas. It's the only real food, and nuts. And some places you can't even get that. So there is, now with Nutribullets and all these things, you can juice out of the car pretty easily. I'll take my Nutribullet and juice in the motel room. So, but it makes the difference in terms of the quality of your energy and ability to perform. If you look at what I do, my mind has to be coherent. I can't be in a fog. So I just can't. So it's, if you go into the back of my car sometime, you'll laugh. But I find it works. So let's jump on to the immune depleters is what you call them, because there are many and we need to touch base on these.
We talked about some of them already, the foods. And of course you have the non-food immune depleters, probably the most common one would be stress. And, it's so common. I mean, everybody has stress, of course. But how you handle the stress. I mean, I always say to my patients, I can't take away the stress, but it can help you handle it better. Because when the body is strong, when the adrenals are strong, et cetera, then you just have different reactions to things. So anyway, stress, emotional stress, work stress, trauma. You have vaccines, and of course with the kids, these are tremendous immune depleters. I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this, and you've had other guests who have talked about vaccines, but, from the flu shot on down to the first day of birth with the, bombardment of all the needles, that we're trying to create artificial immunity when all we really need to do is create keep going and strengthening the natural immunity. And then you mentioned the environmental toxins, which you're probably even more familiar with than I am. I know all of your members who have become patients of mine are extremely educated about environmental toxins. I mean,
right.
I learn from them. It's incredible. But so do you want to list some? I mean, we have, of course, the industrial pollution and automotive pollution.
Right.
And the metals that are in the environment now from all the pollution.
The one thing I will say, because I've done heavy metal detox with you,
mm-hmm.
and I was astonished at what Now as I drive around America, what I realize is the vast majority of the people I see are struggling with heavy metal toxicity, and they don't realize it. And what amazed me going through that detox process, and I would say it's never over, and that's why we did the detox show last year, or one of the reasons we did the detox show last year. But what I realize is a lot of people think that, something is natural with age, and it's not. It's heavy metal detox, and they can get rid of it. And I literally, my process, I literally got 20 years younger in terms of mental capacity by doing it. So it's an amazing... if you want a significant improvement in your mental energy and your sort of emotional happiness, just dump some heavy metals. to me, it's one of the greatest opportunities in America, and most people really don't realize that they are heavy metal. We're all heavy metal toxic, as far as I'm concerned, at this point.
And, there's so many ways that, that they accumulate nowadays. They don't always detoxify first. So if people do your normal cleanses, unless you're using things to actually chelate the metals out of the body, you're probably not getting to the deep layers of
right.
metal accumulation.
Right.
And so this is, this impacts everything from a fatty liver to asthma to memory, focus, concentration. There's so many ways that metals can, and the heart, the health of the heart, because metals are basically minerals, so they throw off, the mineral balance, and being toxic is one thing, but also throwing off the balance of other, just with other minerals in the body. So many things can be impacted by metals. I do want to bring up radiation also, because I'm not sure, maybe you could tell me how things, how people think things are going out on the East Coast as far as radiation, but on the West Coast, really there's a big buzz about, the radiation.
Are you seeing signs of radiation poisoning in your practice?
Well, this is what I'm seeing, I don't really know what that looks like so much as far as radiation poisoning, but this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the surfers being a lot sicker because I'm in an ocean community. So when
right.
I'm working with surfers, I'm just seeing them be there. If you look at our health as being an accumulation of all the good things and all the bad things, that are in our bodies, I'm seeing that the surfers are getting sicker more readily. They have more infections. They're having more skin problems. They're losing hair. I don't know if that's radiation poisoning, but I do know that the biofeedback testing that we do, we can, see certain levels. And I'm in the past year and a half, I've seen the radiation levels on the West Coast in people go way up after the Fukushima incident.
Right.
And I know it's in the water. And I actually had one of my surfer patients say to me the other day that she's moving to, where'd she say, Puerto Rico. Because she's looking at radiation and all, she's doing research on all the waters that she's so passionate about surfing that she's moving her business, to cleaner water. But the other thing is that they're saying that there's a higher incidence of hypothyroidism among babies on the West Coast since the Fukushima incident. And so, of course, the radiation, if you look at the iodine, the iodides have an affinity for the thyroid. The body will uptake iodine. The thyroid will uptake it because it needs it to make thyroid hormone.
Right.
So if it's uptaking sort of a toxic form, and this tremendous incidence of, higher incidence of hypothyroidism among infants, that's pretty scary. I was just wondering, is there a buzz in the East Coast about the radiation?
I don't know. There's not too much talk of it here in Tennessee. But when I'm in California, I spend about 3 to 4 months a year in California. When I'm in California, it's very much on people's minds. And, of course, on the Salieri Report, we've tried and tried and tried to figure out what the truth is on Fukushima, and it's always a struggle. But But I think, you know, where I really hear the concern is out on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And, you know, up into the Vancouver in Canada, you hear it a lot.
Yeah.
I should mention we did, right after Fukushima, we did a Salieri report with Laura on radiation poisoning, and that's linked from this blog post, and I would encourage you to listen to that because I think it's very, very useful.
Just as a, you know, generally speaking, even like after dental x-rays or, you know, whatever type of radiation that you might have gotten, you can do a homeopathic detox, which is super inexpensive, just a 2 or 3 homeopathic drops that really help to get into the cellular level to get radiation out of the body. Taking Epsom salts, baths, doing many body packs, these kind of things are really helpful too. All
okay,
part of
so
keeping strong.
Strategies for boosting our immune system.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the positive side of the conversation. it's always good to end on that note. Well, you know, of course there's more than 10 strategies, but I'm listing 10. And I'm dividing strategy number 1 into 2 parts. And that really is creating your home natural medicine cabinet. I am a huge proponent of having everything at your fingertips that you could possibly need in case blah, blah, blah. And so I've actually created what I consider to be my ideal natural medicine cabinet. Now that I've created it on paper, and now that I'm
right.
Looking at it, I'm thinking, okay, I need to pick up a few more things for my home. Because I have a huge inventory, so all I do is go to the shelf and grab something.
Right.
But, you know, it's really, really important to have the anti-infectives, the natural antibiotics, the natural anti-inflammatories, the topicals that can help with skin infections and eczema and psoriasis and injuries and, you know, it's really important to have all this stuff at your fingertips so that if you have a cold or a flu or your child brings something home from school and you start dousing your child with certain homeopathics, you know, the whole family doesn't have to get sick. You know, you could stop something in its tracks. If you feel that scratch in your throat and you think, okay, here it comes, and you really, like, in a focused way for like 12 hours, really get a lot of things into your body that are going to help to strengthen the immune system and kill that particular whatever it is, virus or bacteria. Wow, I mean, what a great savings that is. What a great way
right.
of improving your life and your whole family's life. It's such a great, you know, I work with families and it's such a great thing when I get choked up when I think about, you know, the parents that I work with them for like maybe 8 months, a year, 12 months, 16 months, and just kind of educate them about how to create your natural medicine cabinet and be able to be your own doctor. I mean, I know we need doctors for certain things, and doctors can do miraculous things. But I think we could all admit that the medical system is being crowded out with people who are going to the doctors for some ridiculous, minute things that they can handle on their own, if they don't know how.
Right.
So having your own medicine cabinet and then knowing how to utilize it. Oh, I wanted to complete my story. It's so great when I'm working with, as I say parents, because it's so great to see parents being able to treat their children for colds and flus and scrapes and, you know, things that people would usually go to the doctor for now. And how empowering it is for them and how much of a savings it is for them and how they feel okay about not having insurance. You know, I have parents that say to me, why do I mean, I haven't, you know, they'll have their catastrophic insurance, but they won't have they either got dropped or they chose not to go forward with insurance policies. And they, because they feel empowered They know how to do
things. Right, well, the economic decision for many people is, do I spend the money on insurance or do I spend it on health care? And you're talking about people who've made the decision to spend it on health.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's spectacular. So having your medicine cabinet is, I think, imperative. I mean, you carry yours with you when you travel.
I do. Yeah, I've got the whole, you know, it's not just what I need day to day, it's the what if. So I've got my what if pack with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I created a natural medicine cabinet list, which I guess you may put on your website, and I sent it over to you guys.
Okay, good.
But another part of the natural medicine cabinet, for me anyway, I work outside the house, so it's your portable natural medicine cabinet. Every morning I spend a good 5 minutes thinking, okay, what do I need to take with me today? Sometimes I forget, you know, I just don't have the time to grab it. But I have now this pouch that I put everything in. And now I carry two purses to the office, my health pouch and my purse. And And so it's a great thing. And in that, I would usually have lymphatic, or I'd have drainage products. I always carry colloidal silver spray. I was marveling at one of my best friends who's 24, and she has a 9-month-old. And she was changing the baby's diapers the other day, and she had the colloidal silver spray that she was spraying when she was changing the baby. And then she washed her hands with it afterwards. And I was thinking, okay, wow, that's a great idea. So I said to her, so I'm doing this conference call with Catherine. Do you have a suggestion for me as far as how people can help winterize their bodies and protect their immune systems? And she said, make sure people spray their cell phones and the doorknobs with colloidal silver spray.
That's a good idea. I had never thought of that. You know, one thing I have to say, which my dear friend Georgie taught me, is wash your hands. You cannot wash your hands too much. When I'm on the road and traveling, it is the best habit in the world to wash your hands, because you would not believe what you get into.
Yeah. Well, that was really one of the first medical breakthroughs, right?
Right, washing your hands. Doctors washing their hands in the hospital.
I know, I'm laughing now, but it is. It does help so much.
Yeah, wash your hands before you eat. You go out to eat, wash your hands before you eat. Mm-hmm. I got a very serious year-long training in food safety rules, and you know, not the ones used to control farmers, but the ones that really, really do make a difference. And you know, washing your hands makes a huge difference.
How did you get that education?
I was up in Montana for 2005, working with one of the leading experts in the world on food. Somebody who built the largest fresh food market in the country in the 80s. So we were trying to figure out a venture capital model to build a local food system. And, of course, one of the big business risk issues is food safety. So if you want to look at the economics of food, you really need to be immersed in food safety rules.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I've gone with him to other countries and gotten into import-export across borders and all the food safety issues. And, of course, you know, food safety issues are used for great things and for evil things alike, so they can be terribly misused. So it all gets you. The political risk issues all get you into the arcane food safety issues. Anyway.
Well, okay, so back to our list. So you have your medicine cabinet that you need for home and stuff to carry with you. I'm a huge proponent of fermented food. So the second thing on my list for immune boosters is things with live culture. So making your own sauerkraut, kimchi, kefir, homemade yogurt. I've said this is your probiotic system, that your own natural probiotics. Wow, isn't that great to have your probiotics in your own home? And, you know, the probiotics that help your body make its own antibiotics. That's an important thing. I think the most important thing to remember about probiotics, everybody's thinking, you know, of Activia, which is the thing that on the TV ad about the Activia yogurt. And they're always talking about it for regularity, you know, become regular, the bowels will move. But the whole thing about probiotics really is that they help the body manufacture its own antibiotics. So like acidophilus helps the body manufacture acidophilin, and bifidus helps to manufacture bifidin. And these are the antibiotics that our body uses to destroy bacteria, and it's part of our army, our intestinal army. So live culture foods, which you can do in your own kitchen. I think, and this will be my, you know, we talked with our outline about, I'm trying to think of the term now, New Year's resolutions.
Uh-huh.
So point number three is going to be my New Year's resolution. Sounds kind of simple, but I was a huge exercise fiend all my life. Really, really high impact, just high intensity exercise until I got to be 57 or 58, and I was in this boot camp with these 20 and 30 year olds, and I'm running around a park and I'm doing, you know, 200 jumping jacks and 300 sit-ups and 400 tricep dips, and I'm thinking, I'm crazy. I'm 57 years old, or 58, whatever I was, and I'm tearing down my body. I'm going home. I'm rushing to work. I'm not even eating, so I'm not rebuilding. So basically my point is that I injured myself pretty badly, tendonitis and all kinds of, I just mm-hmm. can't believe. I, you know, even people who are supposed experts grew up.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't treat myself right. So anyway, I'm back, healed, great chiropractic, great body workers that I've had, and doing my own little self-healing exercises. But I'm back, I'm going to get back to exercising. And so people should be active, whatever that means. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to go to the gym. I truly believe that people should have fun at whatever they're doing that's active. So, I mean, if it's hiking or biking or walking or yoga or going to the gym, which some people love and feel great. So whatever
right.
it is, needs to be part of your routine.
There's a great line in World War Z where Brad Pitt looks at this family that's hiding from the zombies, and he says, "Movement is life."
Huh.
And that's the line. Yeah,
that's a
movement
great line.
Is life. Get up and start moving, yeah.
So that would be point number three. Point number four we've already talked about, which is pure water, whether it's your well water, a good filter system, whatever it is, and the right amount of water. And I recommend rehydrate drops because they don't taste bad or anything, and they really help the water get into the cells. And then point five would be, you know, the great food, the great vitamins and minerals that are in your really colorful foods. You know, your oranges, your greens, your yellows. Make your plates colorful. Have your food be, you know, at least 25, if not 50% raw, and or lightly steamed. In the winter, sometimes we need to have warmer food. But these are the foods that all the different colors mean that there are different vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients. And these are your antioxidants. These are what build the immune system and oxygenate your cells. I say point number six is super important, which is building the adrenal glands. I recommend salivary hormone testing, adrenal hormone testing, because that's the way that I've found to help people get really strong, you know, to be able to build muscularly, to be able to metabolically be where they want to be, to have the energy, to be able to sleep. The adrenal function is so important for the immune system. And I think that a lot of times when people get older, they kind of get a little complacent, like, well, I guess I'm supposed to be settling down. I'm supposed to have not as much energy. I'm having aches and pains, and that's all part of it because you see your parents were like that. But no, you don't have to go
right, it doesn't
route.
Have to be like that at all.
And then sleeping, you know, more than ever I'm hearing people sleeping 4 to 5 hours a night. Oh, what is the problem? Well, I wake up, I have to go to the bathroom. If I wake up, I'm like, I can't get back to sleep. I am laying there with my eyes open and all my body is buzzing. waking up fatigued. And part of it is, yes, the adrenal glands are not, you know, the adrenal glands control the 24-hour clock. So there's something going on with the adrenal glands at night. They're usually spiking if a person can't sleep. But also, I work with the brain neurotransmitters. So we work with serotonin and dopamine and GABA and all the brain chemicals. So sometimes people really need to have those fortified because 90% of the serotonin is actually made in the gut. So a lot of times we don't have the best of gut health. So that will actually affect brain function and therefore affect sleep. It's amazing the chain reactions, isn't it, in the body?
Yes. Yes.
So getting sleep, you know, really, really fortifying, rejuvenating sleep, 7 to 8 hours per night. Point eight is washing your hands, which we talked about. Point nine we kind of touched on, which is, you know, just reduce your stress. And I know you can't just change your job or change your family situation, but when you start empowering yourself and working on yourself, then all of a sudden stress starts to melt away. You begin attracting different things. You
right.
know? But do whatever you do for, whether it's religious or, you know, whether it's praying or meditating, communing, you know, wow. I'm a nutritionist, but I'm going to say that this is the most important thing.
Right.
Is whatever you do to get good with yourself, you know, to get centered. And then that brings up point number 10, which is releasing negative emotions, because these are the things that give messages to your immune system, you know, negative messages to the immune system. So having a positive attitude actually has a positive effect on the white blood cells.
Right. Right.
That's the list.
That's a great list, Laura. Thank you very much. That's a great list. And, you know, it's really funny because, you know, the important thing is to just do it. And so to me, a lot of this is about creating habits and great habits. So, you know, which can be a struggle. But you know, what was it Scott Peck said? With perfect discipline, you can solve all problems. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the endocrine system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The endocrine system is really your system for adaptation. It starts with the pineal, pituitary, and hypothalamus, the glands in the brain, in the head. They perceive what's happening externally, whether it's the weather or whether it's toxins or people, and they basically take that information and send the messages to the rest of the endocrine system, which would be your adrenals for stress balancing and energy production, which would be your thyroid for metabolism, which would be your pancreas for blood sugar balance, your liver for so many things, and your thymus gland, which is the seat of the immune system, the ovaries and the testes, the genitals. So the brain controls really the organs in the brain control the rest of the endocrine system. And so there, really, if you get the brain right, then it gives the right orders. You know, it can delegate appropriately.
Right.
And so, you know, I've been doing a lot of neurotransmitter testing recently. I guess my practice is attracting people with insomnia or they're on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds, or they're just people who want to, you know, they feel like the memory is slipping. So I'm 61, so I'm seeing a lot of people in my age range that are, you know, just not as tip-top as they used to be. And so we do this neurotransmitter and amino acid testing, which is done through the urine, and then people get customized amino acid powders based on their test. Sometimes we use creams. It depends on what the person needs. But it's really incredible to see people's memories improve and, you know, people who thought they were on the road to senility bouncing back. Just people feeling a lot more functional, kids being able to do their homework and, you know, that type of thing. These are all very important ways that we can reduce stress by feeling better. But, I mean, I'm assuming that you're also, you wanted to talk about the endocrine system and how it deals with the winter. And
right.
It's super important, because there is more darkness in the winter, to help your body clock become adaptable. I think working on the hormone system is the way to do that. I'm sure there are probably other ways. You know, you could sit with the lights, you know, the Ott lights or the...
Well, whenever the sun comes out, I run out and just walk around and get some sun.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I know out here you think that the sun's always out, but it really isn't. But helping the pituitary and the pineal and the hypothalamus glands, they're the ones that receive light, especially the pineal gland, which is in the back of the cranium. And there are actually homeopathics that you can use to enhance pineal function, enhance hypothalamic function, enhance pituitary function. And, you know, one other thing that happens in the winter, which we should mention, is appetite shifts. And that's actually part of immune function as well, because it's part of adaptation. As we mentioned earlier, as you kind of go within, people, you know, tend to not eat as much. Or maybe they store up some, and then they, you know, they go more in spurts with eating. What do you find with winter eating? Do you notice anything?
I notice because it's colder that I'm hungrier.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm hungrier for, you know, I like to eat at least 50% or more fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But a salad, of course, is cold, so I'm hungrier for warmer foods.
Mm-hmm.
So the struggle for me is to say, you know, it's to how do I achieve the 50% or better fresh, but get the warmth? And of course, the way I do it is I love making soups or having soup, so I drink a huge amount of soup in the winter.
Soup is a major go-to food for me, because I work so much and I can't cook every day. I don't have the time to do that. So I make soup, and I make usually one or two soups on the weekend. And boy, what a great meal! And it's really
right.
I mean, even out in California, we do eat soup in the winter.
Right.
But the other thing about the cold is that the thyroid gland can become challenged. And, of course, the thyroid gland is in your throat, and it governs metabolism. But it also is it works hand-in-hand with the hypothalamus in temperature control in the body. And so having good thyroid support and really taking care of the thyroid gland is super important for handling, you know, body temperature.
Right.
There are certain supplements that you can take for the thyroid, and there are, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's a test. I think I told you about it. I'm just looking at my notes here. So the one of the blood labs that we use, they're offering a complete blood test, which is complete CBC, TSH, T3 and T4 thyroid hormones, and a complete metabolic panel, and the whole thing is like 25 different results for $75.
Yeah, and I'm ordering that right now from you because I want to take that.
it's like, what a deal. That is like, what usually over $300.
We talked about this when we did the detox program, but I want to stress the thing you taught me was the advantage of doing testing,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's once a year, a biofeedback test, the blood work, you know, heavy metal urine test. Every once a year, it really pays to get a test on all these things and really do a check-in on how you're doing. And it's very valuable. You know, that intelligence is really worth its weight in gold. So one of the things I would encourage everybody, you know, once a year is to sit down and get that kind of checkup and testing.
You know, your body shifts.
You
know, that's part of being a human being. We shift. So it's nice to see where you shifted to.
Right. So New Year's resolution. My resolution last year was to stop eating bread, and I can't believe it. I did it.
So great.
So my question that I'm figuring out now is what's going to be my New Year's resolution this year. So tell us, what's going to be your New Year's resolution? What should we think about in terms of doing a New Year's resolution?
Well, whatever makes you feel like you're going forward and in a way that you could be proud of, you know, that you could feel like you've got something under your belt. For me, it's going to be getting active again.
Right.
I've been inactive, and it's so weird for me because I was an athlete. But whatever, you go through stuff in your life, and I'm super excited about getting active again. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but
we quick have some questions that I wanted to ask you before we close. One subscriber says, my work team is in the medical doctor mode. Is having a temperature over 100 degrees, say within the last 24 hours, still the measure for being a risk to others when getting over a virus or bacterial infection?
Okay, so what to do, in other words? Are they at a risk?
In other words, what's the test that says, okay, now I can be around others without causing them risk?
You know, I have a different philosophy, so I might not be the best person to ask about this. But to me, it's your responsibility to be strong, you know. And it's not so much about what person is causing risk, you know, is causing things, you know, to be in a risk category. It's more about the people who are not sick, and are you strong enough, you know. It's your responsibility to anyway, that's my take on it.
So having a strong immune system is also fulfilling responsibility to those around you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think a person with a 100-degree fever is causing a problem. I mean, I'm around sick people all the time, and I don't get sick from it.
Right.
It's really good to shift your mind into you don't have to be feeling that you're threatened. You know,
right.
That's like the germ theory, the medical way of looking at things. So that doesn't sound like a serious problem to me.
Okay.
I just think, do you? Do you think that is 100 degrees?
No, I agree. If you have a strong immune system, you don't have to worry. I think the problem is a lot of people have workplaces where the majority of people don't have strong immune systems, and then they, you know, then they're worried about how do I not pass it on. So let me ask you the next one.
Oh, let me just say this, though, that there are things that you can do, you know, the whole washing the hands things, taking colloidal silver. I have a whole bunch of things listed in the medicine cabinet that are anti-infective. These are the ways that you can make yourself strong when there's,
right,
you know, that kind of situation.
Right. It's funny, the toll operators, when I travel, they're always saying, what is that? And then I educate them as to what thieves is, because they can smell it. You know, it's full of spices. So I have no idea whether it works or not, but it certainly mentally makes me feel protected. Is Viracord attenuated detoxifier for viruses, which is too complex for me to self-apply, it seems, a good product with naturopathic guidance?
I know that product. I used to use it.
Can you explain what it is? I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, it's a homeopathic dropper bottle, and it has different, it would take a long time to explain what homeopathics are, although some people probably know, but it's basically like treats like. So in the homeopathic dropper bottle, the nosodes would be different energetics, let's say, different vibrations. I know that sounds really new agey. Different imprints,
right,
of different viruses would be in this product. It's multiple viruses and the energetic of that virus and then you take that to prevent the virus. And that's, you know, that's basically how homeopathics work. Like treats like. So I know the product. It's a very good product. That product should not be taken without drainage or lymphatic homeopathics too. So a nosode product with those kind of viral imprints needs to be taken with like the Lymph Tone. I don't use that product anymore. I use a higher vibe, something that I like better than that now, but it is a very good product.
Okay, next one. For years, I've been making my own 5 ppm colloidal silver with 0.999 pure silver wire and a regulated DC power supply that I built myself. I found it useful as an antifungal agent for the skin, and I will also take 30 milliliters times 2 a day when I have a cold. When you make it yourself, it is an effective and inexpensive replacement for hand sanitizers. Is it better to make an ionic silver with pure saline and distilled water or just silver and distilled water? Is there a difference in the effectiveness of the silver in the two solutions?
Well, this person obviously knows much more about making colloidal silver than I do. Yes, I know. I spoke to you about this before, Catherine. I think that if you make colloidal silver and it works for you, then it's effective. The reason that I don't is because, first of all, I just haven't gotten into it, and I've always used over-the-counter, you know, products that I use. I use colloidal gel, I use colloidal spray, I use colloidal liquid. I recommend nasal spray, a colloidal nasal spray. So I have lots of products in my inventory that I know work really well, that are made
right.
by a company that I know really well, and so, I mean, some of your listeners probably know Robert Scott Bell, and he's affiliated with the company that I utilize the products. I know they have a tremendous reputation, and so therefore, I use what I know works. And
right.
I'm not saying that making it yourself couldn't work, because I do know that it can be successful. I just don't know enough about it.
Okay, well, that's it for questions. Thank you so much for this interview. Now, tell us how we stay current with you, how we access you. Give us a little 411 on finding you and getting more if we want it.
Okay. Just to call my office. I have an 800 number. It's 800-608-5602. Just tell my staff you came from the Solari Report, and you get a reduction in the first appointment, which my first appointment is usually an hour, and it's usually $250, and it's so coming from Solari, you're getting it for $195. So that's a pretty nice.
That's very generous of you. But I would point out what everybody says is, you know, the Solari people are always much more fun to deal with.
It is so true. I mean, it's such a breath of fresh air when I'm working with someone from Solari. So I guess it's just more like-mindedness and
uh-huh.
Yeah, we just love it. and I want to reiterate about that blood test for that $75 really comprehensive blood test. And you know, it's a great deal for people who don't have insurance or whose doctors
right.
don't want or won't, you know, nowadays there's so many HMOs and there's so many limitations with what insurance companies will pay or what doctors think they will pay that the doctors won't even order complete blood tests anymore, even if you ask. So that's why I like this, because you don't need to go through your medical person to
right.
get it.
Right. Okay, well, Laura, this has been incredibly instructive, and I hope that this really helps a lot of members of our network be as healthy as they possibly can be this winter and every winter thereafter that they listen to this. So thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, too, Catherine. And goodbye to everybody. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.